Mexico. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 462, to be broadcast on Wednesday, November 26th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of a week. Okay, this came from a notification that someone sent me about. It was actually put together through the Global Cycling Network, and it talked about in over 2 years, six road cyclists have lost their lives in UCI ranked races, with speeds getting higher and crashes becoming more frequent. Yeah. Okay. So true. It is all true that the races are getting faster. The risks are definitely higher. I've been a real, real strong opponent to the race promoters and the way they finish races, especially when they've got the big sprint finishes where you've got these big trains of cyclists coming in, narrow streets, sharp turns, etc. I definitely think that contributes to it and definitely runs a problem. But let's put this into reality, just so you know. Let's compare that to U.S. road cycling in the United States. Okay, United States cycling in as far as the risk goes for regular people riding bicycles on the roads in the United States. Cyclist deaths increased from a record of 1,105 in 2022, which was then revised to 1,117 in the latest data, to a new record of 1,166 in 2024. Conclusion? It's far safer to race bicycles. Way, way safer. What's the X factor there? I'll tell you what the X factor is. When you're racing your bicycle and you're racing in that type of environment, what you're going to find is you're going to find that the roads are blocked off or monitored or controlled by pace vehicles, etc. So anyway, as much as, yeah, it's getting tough out there for the professional bicycle racers, it's way tougher on you and I when we're out riding our bikes. So just a heads up, I want you to be safe out there, be careful out there, ride on the roads with the names, not the roads with the numbers. If you want to stay safe, that's definitely the best way to do it. That's one of my encouragements to you. It's a tough road out there. So please, please be careful. And please be careful over this Thanksgiving Day weekend coming up, because that tends to put a lot more people on the roads. So do be careful. Please, please, please. And get this. In Brussels, the pedestrian zone is so crowded that it's restricting bicycles. What? You got to be kidding me. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. I'm going to move on to the positive side, and we're going to talk today. I'm going to introduce you to something called the Dutch Intersection. The Dutch Intersection is coming to save your life. Speaking of safety on the roads, inspired by road safety innovations widely used in the Netherlands, several U.S. cities are installing street crossings that can better protect pedestrians and bicyclists. We'll have more in the show. Thought this was kind of a cool thing. And let's see, more bicycling in Chicago since I was out in Chicago a couple weekends ago visiting my son. I just keep finding more interesting things from Chicago. One is Chicago street vendors. Since the start of the federal immigration crackdown, it has led to more than 3,300 arrests in Chicago metropolitan area. Streets and storefronts in the city's Latino neighborhoods have emptied out. Street vendors, fearing arrest, have been afraid to leave their homes to go to work. Local restaurants have struggled as customers stay home, but there is some good news. More in the show. And we'll get on to that. Also, cargo bikes, another positive thing. How much can you carry in that? That's a good question. And maybe I have a little bit of information there that I can share with you about what you can do with a cargo bike. Why am I mentioning cargo bikes? Because I saw a whole bunch of them in Chicago. It's really cool. I saw, moms and dads pedaling the cargo bikes with the kids inside, with groceries, with all sorts of cool stuff. I mean, it's a thing, it's happening, and it's out there, and they're becoming much more commonplace than they used to be. They're very heavy duty. They work great if you're on flat roads. If you have hills, it's a bit of a stretch, but once you put a little bit of electric power to them, then they're not so bad in the hills either. So anyway, we'll talk more about that in the show. Mechanical Minute and bike tips, preparing your bike for winter storage. Yeah, so there's, baby, it's cold out there. And there's a lot of people who say, you know what? I'm just not going to ride my bike in the wintertime. Or I have a particular bike going to ride in the wintertime, but then I have the other three bikes that I really like to ride in the fair weather. And what do you do with them? So we'll talk a little bit more about preparing your bike for winter storage. And actually, I'm going to jump right into that right away just to get us started. So we're going to go up to this is a little checklist thing. And of course, this is put on, this is also sponsored by a bicycle cover company that is out there called VeloSock, but that's beside the point. I just want to go over a few things because they had some step-by-step guides for properly preparing your bike for winter storage. And so it'll all be set for you for the next season. First of all, inflate the tires. Yeah, you don't want to let the tires sit too soft over the wintertime. As a matter of fact, if your bike is hanging somewhere where it's open and exposed, like say in a garage or a shed or a barn or something like that, or maybe even a basement, you might want to just check the tires every once in a while to make sure that they're still maintaining some sort of pressure in them. I would say that they will probably lose pressure over the wintertime. So I would be very inclined to just double check them. You can do the thumb test. The thumb test is fine. You're not going for a ride on it. You're just trying to keep you keep the tires from deflating too much so that the sidewalls don't crack, the rubber doesn't crack, that sort of thing. So if you're planning to store your bike resting on its tires as opposed to having suspended from the ceiling, then this part is really, really important. But even if you're hanging it from the ceiling, I would say that you might want to just double check them to be sure. I would say every month or two is probably enough time to do that sort of thing. So you might want to just check that out and see. So if your tires are flat, the weight of the bike presses down on the tires on the rubber, and it's likely to deteriorate your tires over time. The rubber can become distorted and develop a weak spot in the sidewall. So especially if your bike is sitting on the floor or on a cold surface like concrete, it will make the tires lose pressure more because of the cold. So you want to make sure that you inflate your tires and check them periodically as they may lose pressure over the long winter months. Keep in mind that if they do deflate in cold conditions, the sidewalls of the tires are likely to crack when you pump them back up in the spring. We had so many people used to come into the bike shop and they bring their bikes in the spring and their bikes had been sitting around all winter long. They come in, they said, could you just check the bike over, make sure it's okay? The first thing I looked at was the tires. And I would always I would always inflate the tires once they came in, put a little bit of pressure in them so I could take a look at them and give them a little bit of volume, a little bit of shape so we could take a look at the condition of the rubber. But I could always tell if someone had let it sit down to the point where the tires were squished out. Most people came in and they said, I know I probably need some new tubes because my tires are flat. Well, that's maybe not so. Maybe your tires are flat just because you never inflated them before winter, and then they just sat on the rims all winter long, which made them look like they were damaged or flattened in some way. Generally speaking, once we put some air back in those tubes, we usually got it to stay. So people don't realize how the thin walls of the tubes that there are made now tend to just leach air over time. So that is something that you might want to just double check. And again, a nice floor pump works really good. Some people have these handy dandy compressors. Some people are using these really, really interesting little inflators that you can get. I've seen various ones on the internet now that you can get that are USB charged, and they're real handy. They're pretty cool. I saw one of that was when I was down at the Pennsylvania Dutch Farm to Fork Fondo this year. The bike shop that was there was using one of those. Actually, they had a couple of them, and they said they're like the handiest and coolest thing they've ever used. They really work well. And they're relatively inexpensive, probably about the price of a good floor pump, although I believe a good floor pump is always the better way to go. But, you know, you do what you have to do. So anyway, keeping the proper air pressure in the tires, you can find it usually on the sidewall of the tire, but you know, hopefully by now from listening to me over the last few weeks or months that, you know, we tend to overinflate our tires, and that running your tires for the pressure of your body weight and your riding style is preferable to putting in the air pressure that is listed on the side of the tire. I find that most of the air pressures that are on the sides of the tires way exceed what you personally need. And again, back to the hint, and that is go to silca.com, silca.com, and type in your weight and your riding style, your riding preference, the size of your tires. It'll tell you exactly what you need. And it's a really handy little guide. So anyway, I would check that out. So you're getting ready to store the bike. Give your bike a proper clean, all right? Remember, when you bought the new bike, it was like clean and shiny and bright like candy and squeaky clean. Yeah, it was a while ago, but not true anymore. Bikes get dirty, obviously. But just wipe it down, wash it down, pull the wheels off, and then spray the whole frame down with some sort of a safe type cleaner, maybe a little solvent just to get some of the greasy stuff off, but not too much solvent because you don't want to get that into the bearings or anything like that. But you might want to just wipe it down real good. You can use old rags for this, and you can also, what we used to do for cleaning bikes, and what I still have done sometimes, is I have a bike stand that I take outside and I fill a bucket of water up. I fill up a bucket with warm water and a soapy solution, and then I just wash the bike down. And you can also, you know, spray the bike off with a hose if you're outside. That's if you have that type of luxury and you're able to do that sort of thing. I know apartment dwellers don't particularly have that, but you might have the ability to just bring that bucket down. Maybe two buckets, and if you bring two buckets down, one of those buckets can have clean water in it and the other one can have the soapy solution in it, and you can just wash the bike down real good. get in between the derailleur areas and the down around that bottom bracket area. Gets pretty grimy down there. You might want to just scrub away at that and get it all cleaned up and looking good. You know, that's a really good thing. So you're going to need that bucket of warm water, some sort of a bike cleaner, or, you know, you could use dishwashing liquid, because dishwashing liquid, believe it or not, is petroleum based. Yeah, folks, not all dishwashing liquid is petroleum based, but the ones that they advertise on TV that help clean up the ducts in the bay when the oil spills happen, those are petroleum based. Anyway, not pointing any fingers at any particular detergent, but remember that not all detergents are made alike. And if you're looking for something that's much more environmentally friendly, you try to probably find something without some a petroleum base in it. That's why they cut grease so well. Ouch. Degreaser. Yes, a good degreaser works well. That's now we're going to go back to that petroleum-based product, and we're going to go to something that is probably going to cut the grease a little bit better on the bike. So you get a lot of overspray from the chain. You get various things that will happen. There are some environmentally good cleaners, though, the orange solvent type cleaners, that sort of thing, that work fairly well too, and they will clean off a grimy bike. So you might want to look at that instead of a actual chemical degreaser. A sponge and some rags. Yep, you're going to need those. And bike cleaning brushes. So there's all sorts of nifty brushes you can get for cleaning your bike, or I say, you can go to your local, let's say, dollar store, and you can find a unique supply and collection of different types of brushes for cleaning with. That's what I use, and I can pretty much get into and around all things that way. I also have been known to use an old paintbrush. An old paintbrush works pretty good, especially if it's something with a fairly stiff bristle, because you can take it and you can put it right into that warm water and really swish it around. Gets in between all the adjustment screws on the front derailleur, and that front derailleur gets pretty grimed up after a while. So does the rear derailleur. And you can get in there with that brush, but any kind of stiff brush will work. So I recommend a stiff brush just because I think it will get to the problem a little bit better and be a little bit more effective. Something that's real soft, not so much. Again, I go back to the good old dollar store, which our dollar store isn't a dollar anymore, by the way. But that's beside the point. I guess times have changed, and things are more expensive now. So our dollar store is now in the $1.25 store. But anyway, check out the toothbrush collection there. Yeah, toothbrushes work great. The old standard toothbrush. Now you can either save your old toothbrush, which is one way of doing it, or you can just go out and buy new ones. And once again, the harder the bristles, the better it is for cleaning with, and I think they work really, really good for that sort of thing. So I would, you can usually buy them in like a 3-pack or something like that, and they work great for cleaning your bike, really getting into those little nooks and crannies on your bike. So you want to really work on cleaning everything out. And after you do it, after you do that, you're going to have to of course, dry everything up real good and re-lubricate everything. But let's start with the chain. The chain is always a mess. Chains get messy over time. Chains wear out over time. If your chain is at a point where it is probably in need of replacement, then you don't have to get real crazy with this. And you can even take it off, and maybe this is a good time to put a new chain on. I don't know how you guys do it, but how I do it is I write down the mileage on the bike when I put a new chain on, so I know exactly how many miles I have on the chain before I replace it. And I have a general rule which works for me, but it doesn't always work for everyone. I find that depending on what style of rider you are, I tend to be a high RPM, low wattage spinning kind of guy, so my chains last a little longer than some of my friends who are big gear pushers, and they're really grinding hard on that chain, and they wear the chain out quicker that way. So I also know that there are also a number of people that I ride with who ride with their chain in the wrong position on the bike, otherwise known as a cross chain, so that there's such a distance between the front cog and the rear cog that it will stress and stretch out that chain very, very quickly. But if it's time to replace the chain, this might be a good time to do that. So you might want to do that too. And then, of course, you can take the wheels off the bike and you can get back there in the cassette. You can clean it up real nice. If you want to get really, really meticulous about it, you can pull the cassette off and soak it in some sort of a solvent and then get that old brush out and get in there and really, really clean. And if you really, really want to get crazy about it, if you take the cog set apart, you can clean each and every individual gear. It's tedious. It's something you do when you have lots of time, because it is going to take lots of time. And then you clean everything off afterwards. At the same time, you would be taking off the crank set, or you would be at least paying attention to the crank and the gears that are up in the front by the pedals, and you'll be cleaning those off real nicely too. So you definitely want to try to clean as much of that stuff off as possible. That's where the solvent comes in, and it tends to work really good for breaking down some of the greasy stuff. And then after you get done, you rinse your bike with clean water, wipe it down with a sponge or a rag, dry your bike off straight away with a dry rag. And here's a pro tip for you. Don't use a pressure washer, because a pressure washer can force water to go where you don't want it to go, and you really don't want to get water inside the frame or in the bearing areas and your wheels or in the bottom bracket of your bike. So a light hose would work fine, but pressure washer is probably not a great idea. Works great in the cyclocross races, but those bikes get rebuilt pretty regularly because of the amount of abuse that goes through them. So wipe everything down real good, and then if you're putting everything back together again, like putting a new chain on, or maybe taking the old chain that you cleaned up real well and you put it all back on, you definitely want to put some lubrication back on it. You want to re-lubricate the chain. And also little drops of lubrication all over the derailleurs so that they don't rust up on you after being exposed to water and having everything cleaned off. So I highly recommend using some sort of a good quality bicycle lubricant for that sort of thing. And again, that's personal preference as far as what you want to use. So you want to also take a look at your bike really closely for any kind of damage that may be on the bike. Has your bike been creaking a lot lately and you're trying to figure out where that noise has come from? Check and make sure that a tube isn't damaged in some way, or cut or split, or or broken in some way. This is a good time because you've got the wheels off, you're taking a really good look at the bike. So take a good once over on the bike and make sure everything looks good. And if there's anything suspicious that you have any concern about, bring it down to your local bike shop and say, hey, is this right? Is this good? Is this not good? Should I be worried about this? They'll give you a good solid opinion on that. So now your bike's all clean. It's a good chance to, like I said, you inspect it for damage, make sure everything looks good. You might want to check out I would look for cracks or metal fatigue, especially on weld spots around the bottom bracket. This is where your bike supports a lot of weight, has a lot of torque. So you want to just take a really, really good look and see how everything looks down there. Rarely have I seen anything break any other areas of the bike, although occasionally I have seen a chainstay break all the way back really close to the dropout on the rear end of the bike. And I have also occasionally seen a fork fatigue also. So you gotta really take a good look at it. Make sure everything looks good. Again, if your bike was making any kind of unusual noises before you decided to give it its winter bath, that's a sign that maybe something wasn't right. So I would just be real cautious about looking at that. You also want to inspect your wheels and your tires, as well as your brake pads. Brake pads do wear down as well, that whether it be a rim brake pad or whether it be a disc brake pad, they wear out and they need to be replaced occasionally. If you're using disc brakes, they need to be replaced far more often than rim brakes do. So you want to take a look and make sure that everything's good there. You want to look over your wheels, make sure there aren't any broken spokes. That can be a problem for sure. If you hadn't noticed a broken spoke while you were out riding your bike, I'd be super surprised. But the one thing I do look for is I look for any kind of loose spokes or you know, something that just doesn't feel right on the wheel. Check the wheel for trueness. Make sure that it's going straight and not wobbling side to side or going up and down. And that, of course, can be resolved with a truing stand and a spoke wrench. Remember, as I've told people in the past, the spoke wrench was the most dangerous tool I sold in the bike shop, because you can do a lot of damage with that thing if you're not careful. So make sure you know what you're doing before you use that. And as for the brake pads, make sure they're aligned properly. You can look and see if they have wear or not. A lot of the rubber pads that you have on a regular set of caliper brakes will have grooves in them. And those grooves generally are there to help repel water when you're hitting, you know, a wet spot in the road, that sort of thing. But if you don't see any grooves in your brake pads anymore, time for new brake pads, folks. Definitely time for new brake pads. Unless you have some sort of exceptional, weird composite brake pad that doesn't have grooves in it, which is out there also. If you want to check your bike out for more serious damage, take it to a bike shop. Let the bike shop take a look at it and see. And now, we've done all the cleaning and we're still getting ready to put the bike away. Make sure you lubricate the cables and the chain. Sometimes it's not a choice, it's a must, okay? Lubricating the bike prevents corrosion as well as protects moving parts from excessive wear and crucial for good bike performance in the long run. By the way, before putting everything back together again, a little bit of wax on the frame is kind of nice because it'll help repel some of the new season grit and grime, which will be kicking up. Makes it a lot easier to clean afterwards. So a little coat of wax works really, really well too. You can get anything from the auto parts store will help you there. Also, We used to use the good old spray furniture polish. It works really, really good. And it's also really, really nice after you've cleaned everything. You spray down with that and then wipe it down. You'll find out that your nice clean rag you're wiping it down with is dirty still, because maybe you didn't get all that grit off. So a couple of coats of that works really, really good too. And it just repels moisture when you get back out again. And you want to lubricate the cables, or this might also be a time to inspect the cables and replace the cables. Remember, cables don't last forever if you're using cables. If you're using electronics and you have wires, you might want to check the wires and make sure that they're in good shape, because sometimes the wires can get frayed or they get pulled on or whatever. They might get caught on something. So you want to double check all cables and wires that are running your derailleur systems on the bike, as well as your brake systems on the bike. If you're using disc brakes with fluid in them, then obviously that's an entirely different game. But so you want to use a fairly light bike lubricant, because if it's too thick, it's going to attract a lot of dirt and grit and grime. So oil that's too thin will dissipate quickly and it won't hold. Well, then there's the mix of the paraffin type lubricants and the Teflon type lubricants. Teflon, remember, is a dangerous product. It's not, it's a carcinogen, and you want to be careful if you're spraying anything like that on your bike. I would wear a mask if I were doing that sort of thing now. I didn't do that in my early days. I hope I'm not going to pay for it now, but anyway, just be careful. And the pro tip here is to not over lubricate, because it can lead to poor performance and damaged bike components. I don't agree with that part so much, but I do believe that you can do a full lubrication on the bike and then do a wipe down afterwards to get any excessive lubrication off the bike. I have a particular type of lubricant I like to use in my chain. I discovered it about 2 years ago, and it is weird looking stuff, but it lasts forever. It really does last a long time, and darned if I can't remember exactly what it is. But if you want to know, drop me an email and I'll send you over a picture of it, or I will describe it to you so you can find something. It would only be found in a specialty bike shop, I believe, because I haven't seen it anywhere else. But this stuff is magic, and it stays on the chain for a really, really long time. I just really like it, and I won't use anything else now. And then at the very end, when you get done, if you are in an environment that is damp in any way, maybe it's a damp basement, maybe it's a shed or a barn and it's outside, you might want to just cover the bike. And that's where this company comes in, and they make these fancy-dancy bike covers which go over the whole bike frame and wheels and everything. Is that necessary? Probably not. Can you do it with something else? Probably can. I would also throw in an idea here. It's not going to look real pretty, but if you can find an old sheet or something, maybe an old bed sheet that you threw out, or you were putting it down near the rag bin and you were going to, you were going to tear it up and turn it into rags. Old flannel sheets work really nice because they're nice and soft on the bike frame. But you can wrap it all up with that, and that'll keep it protected and keep dust off of it over the wintertime, especially if you have a dusty environment. So that's it. Cover the bike and then say, good night, bike. I will see you when the bears wake up, the bike will wake up, right? So you put the bike into hibernation and let it hang out wherever you keep your bikes over the wintertime, and hopefully they'll be in good shape by the time you get going again. This is also one of these things that I used to encourage people to do at my bike shop when I have the bike shop, is bring the bike in and get a complete do-over on the bike over the wintertime. And your local bike shop will inspect those cables, will inspect those tires, will make sure that everything is in tip-top condition for you when you're ready to ride in the spring. Big pro tip here. Get it to them early, please. Do not bring it in March and say, hey, can you give my bike a full overhaul, workover, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you can do that, but they're going to be busy and it's going to take them time. If you give it to them in the wintertime, they can take their time and really go over it with a fine-tooth comb and, you know, really have everything prepared for you. That's for the bike that you're not riding in the winter. Now, those of you who ride your bikes in the wintertime, that's an entirely different game. But you may have another bike which you like to ride in the spring and summer, which is your, you know, nice bike, the one that looks real sharp, and, you know, maybe it's your kind of semi-pro race bike sort of thing or whatever. You know, everybody's got, well, hopefully everybody has more than one bike. I've got 5 or 6. But, you know, if it's going to sit all winter long, this is a good time to just do the once over on it. Clean it all up real nice. Make sure everything looks brand spanking new, so when you go to pull it down off the hook in the wintertime, in the springtime, the only thing you probably should need to do is put some air in the tires, right? If you're looking for the guide, Silca, SILCA.com. Check it out. They've got a really cool guide for for setting you up with the proper air pressure for your weight and performance level. So check it out. That's what I have. That's it's definitely a thing you can do for winter storage. Whatever your storage situation is, where you live, if you're an apartment, you may have, you know, a basement area that is, you know, has a caged off area for your particular apartment, or maybe you'll have a garage space or something, you never know. But my thing is, and I really think this is important, is just get the wheels off the floor. I really think hanging the bike is the best way to go. I use those relatively inexpensive storage hooks, and they work great for just hanging the bikes up. So anyway, that will get you through our tips of the week, our cycling tips of the week. And after that, we are going to go to, I just want to go back and reflect on the crash situation. The crash situation and the people who die in accidents on the professional bike circuit. There have been a lot of, there were a whole bunch of posts that came out on the Global Cycling Network's Facebook page. And there were people that had different comments about different things. One of the people says, modern road infrastructure causes a lot of accidents in the big tour races. Just when they are going full tilt for the line. Yes. Road furniture is what they call it. Road furniture does cause accidents. Road furniture also saves lives and slows cars down. So should you be racing into road furniture when you're coming into the end of a race? Should it be monitored more carefully? And in the good races that I've seen, there's usually a person standing right on that center island that we use to calm traffic, and they got flags waving, and you know, they're very, very, very visible. And so hopefully you wouldn't hit anything like that. But yeah, as we increase our infrastructure to slow traffic down, because you can tell people to slow their motorized vehicles down, but you can't make them slow their motorized vehicles down. But if you put more traffic calming devices out on the road, then they will be forced to slow their vehicles down. So it happens, you know. And there's a few other things here. Not all crashes are due to increased speed. The sprints are for the brave and a little crazy, full gas. Yeah, they often crash when eight guys are going for first place. It's all true. It's the end of a race, and there's a lot of banging of elbows. There's a lot of banging of shoulders, and sometimes you just get a little too close, and then things are not pretty. That's why I didn't ever perfect my sprint at the end of a race, because I didn't want to play that game. It's too dangerous. To me, it's too dangerous. I was more of a road rider. I really liked that a little bit better. If I were going to be doing a sprint finish at the end, it would hopefully be with only a select few people that possibly I got away with. And that's the safest way to do it. But the U.S. criteriums are great to watch, but, you know, people crash often on them, that's for sure. Velodrome racing is also dangerous, and there's lots of crashes. It's an inherent part of the sport, folks. That's what it is. The technology does exist to neutralize dangerous descents, setting a minimum time from the summit to the base, which getting to the bottom quickly results in stopping and waiting. I don't agree with that, and I would not do that. It's a bike race. Point A, point B, fast as I can. That's why they call it a race. Someone else suggested smaller teams, more space, and slower speeds. You're not going to get anybody to slow down, not in a bike race. It's just not going to happen. And again, I'm telling you, the bike racers, even though they are professional racers, they do run into situations where they're going to have an accident now and then. It's part of the game. And they have a much better chance of existing than you and I just out riding our bikes in traffic. So that's it. I'm going to stop beating this dead horse because that is enough of that. We're going to move on to the Chicagoans to street vendors. Okay, so in Chicago, there was a big, there's been a big crackdown. This ICE campaign that's gone in is really a problem. Interesting thing, my son and I were out for a walk in Chicago, and I started asking about the ICE thing, and he said, "Oh, darn, I left my whistle at home." I said, "What do you mean, your whistle?" And he said, "Oh, we're all carrying whistles now. And if we see ICE agents, we just start blowing our whistles as loud as we can. And it warns people that there's an ICE thing going on in the city and to stay away." Isn't that interesting? Yeah, people are reacting to all this, but the interesting thing that's going on in Chicago is there's a community organizer with Cycling of Solidarity who helps organize these buyout rides per week, typically supporting five street vendors each. These vendors are often speechless. They'll say, "I have a lot of tamales. You want all of them?" And so they're basing bike rides around food trucks in the city of Chicago. And they're helping out these people by kind of flash mobbing them on a bike ride. I think that is great. It's all about food and the joy of riding your bike. And as you know, if you are a bike rider and you listen to this show often enough to pay attention to this sort of thing, it's all about the food. I mean, it's all about the bike ride, but it's also about, so on my bike ride, where am I going to stop to get some food? Or maybe I'll ride to the cafe and I'll have a little something and then I'll ride home and that'll be part of my bike ride today. So, street vendors, it's hard to say in Chicago how many street vendors have been targeted by federal immigration agents. An outreach organizer for Street Vendors Association of Chicago adding that she knows of at least 10 who have been detained. In September, a tamale vendor was detained while selling outside of a Home Depot, according to local advocates. Soon after, federal agents arrested a flower seller in the southwest neighborhood of Archer Heights. And they came for a cotton candy vendor in a predominantly Mexican American little village. Immigration agents descended on a Swap-O-Rama flea market in October and detained more than a dozen people. And a few weeks ago, more than 100 residents of Brighton Park neighborhood rallied to demand the release of their local tamalero. So they are targeting certain businesses that may have a possibility of an illegal immigrant, but they're arresting people that are not illegal, and it's really kind of disgusting what's going on here. So here's to the cyclists who are flash mobbing these food trucks and helping them out. And it's all good. It's great when people help out one another. I think it's just a wonderful thing. So one of the vendors said it's been emotional to see. The vendors themselves don't realize how much Chicagoans love and support them. None of them expected this. The restaurants sometimes draw hundreds of people. So that is just a thing I wanted to touch base with in Chicago. I think it's really cool. And yay, Chicago. I'm starting to like that city. Of course, my son lives there too, so I kind of like that part too. Because when I go there, I get to see all sorts of cool, interesting things, including Sue. If you know who Sue is, you can send a comment over to me. And if you don't, I'm going to let you figure that one out on your own. But I got to visit Sue when I was in Chicago the last time. So, anyway, So there's a lot of things going on out there that are interesting. And let's see here. Where is it here? So Brussels. Pedestrian zone is so crowded, it's restricting bikes. So, I mean, this came from the original rant earlier today. The city of Brussels is shifting its policies in their pétonnière zone due to tensions between cyclists and pedestrians. Cyclists and pedestrians have clashed in the zone, with cyclists not adhering to the 6 kilometer per hour speed limit, leading to complaints from pedestrians. Hey, I don't want to talk about this. Pedestrian speed in pedestrian areas. Hello, folks. Listen loud and clear. Pedestrian speed in pedestrian areas. You don't need to go blasting through there on your bike. It's just going to cause a problem. The city has announced a ban on bikes in the zone most of the day, with bikes only allowed between 4 and 11 a.m., and it's considered diverting bikes to its parallel access along narrower streets to the west. Can you believe this? It's bad enough that we have to worry about the cars out there. Now we have to worry about the pedestrians. Well, we should worry about the pedestrians. Pedestrians are one of the most vulnerable users out there. Bicycles are falling into a near, very, very close second place there. So it certainly is something that we should be aware of. But the fact that they are now starting to figure out that they have to make considerations for the number of pedestrians, first things first. If there's that many pedestrians, then we're doing the right thing. It's personal transportation. It's a good thing. So this leads us into the same old thing. Infrastructure needs to be built for both, and it's something that we really need to keep focusing on. So I just happened to see this little piece come across my desk, and I couldn't leave it alone, but sidewalks are not for bicycles. I'll say it 1,000 times over. By the way, the altering speed is 3.7 miles per hour, or 6 kilometers per hour. So when you're riding your bike that slow, you probably shouldn't be where the pedestrians are, because you're going to get real impatient. So anyway, hopefully the coexistence will work. We'll see what happens there, but and we'll kind of keep our eyes on this and see what the deal is in Brussels. Okay, let's go on to another thing I mentioned earlier here, and that thing was the Dutch intersection. Okay, inspired by road safety innovations widely used in the Netherlands, several US cities are installing street crossings that can better protect pedestrians and cyclists. Okay, about once a month, the Californian advocacy group Bike East Bay organizes classes for adults who forget or never learned the basics of cycling. They're almost always fully booked, says advocacy director Robert Prinz. During the 3-hour sessions, most people get the hang of steering, pedaling, and keeping balance. When the question becomes, okay, now where do I ride? Well, participants often express anxiety about riding in traffic. Navigating intersections is especially daunting. There's a risk of right hook crashes, where an inattentive driver turns directly into the path of a cyclist riding straight through an intersection. Left turns can mean merging into traffic or waiting in the middle of a vast square of naked asphalt for oncoming traffic to clear. Collisions are common. That's why, if you are going straight and you're going into an intersection, do not, I repeat, do not ride on the right-hand side of the road. Take the lane. Take the lane. If the car coming up behind you gets annoyed, then let them be annoyed. But if you take the lane, they will not have the possibility of making a right-hand turn into you, which could be as much as either a bad little bump or fatal. So don't give the driver of the automobile the opportunity to violate your space. That's really, really important. So anyway, there's There's definitely fatal and severe injury crashes with pedestrians and cyclists getting hit at street crossings. And they're doing a lot on improving intersections. But it brought to the city to a design that has been cropping up all over North America in recent years, the protected intersection, also known as Dutch style, due to its widespread adoption in the Netherlands. Its key feature is football-shaped corner islands that create a forward queuing area for cyclists and pedestrians, positioning them in easy view of waiting drivers and shortening their crossing distance. They also force drivers to make sharper turns, slowing them down and making cyclists and pedestrians more visible. The layout offers clarity for who goes where, which is especially helpful for cyclists wanting to make left turns. They can first cross straight and then wait behind the opposite corner's island for their left turn, all while staying on the bike path. Together, the elements of the protected intersections minimize zones of conflict with cars and decrease the likelihood of severity of collisions. So it's there's a great piece. What is this on? This is actually a Bloomberg article. And they actually show an intersection and the insanity that goes along with four-way intersections, followed by two to four lanes going into them from every direction. It's just, it really is very car-centric and certainly is alarming in many, many ways. But now that we're putting these medians in, and the medians are the crosswalk is in the median, so at least the walk, the person, the pedestrian who's walking across the intersection can hide in that center section there while the cars who illegally blast through the crosswalks continue to blast through. At least they have a level of protection. It makes it a little bit easier for them to defend themselves when the crazies are out there driving their cars. So it's something that they've just started doing up in stores. So we are getting a really nice improvement on Route 275 as you close in towards campus. So no longer is there that wide open crosswalk where you really kind of have to dart and dash to get across it, but now it's protected. So that works well. And of course, you know, really to do it right, you should have a protected bike lane too, and it's protected by a parallel parked car on the outside of the lane, because that way another car can't get into the bike lane accidentally. So there are designs that work, and it looks a lot more complicated than it really is, but protected intersections aren't uniquely Dutch. Small designs were considered in U.S. cities as far back as the early 1970s, planning documents show, but they didn't align the predominant planning philosophy of that era, which encouraged vehicular cycling, having riders behave like motorists and mixing them in general traffic. Once again, as I tell people, when I'm speaking with them about riding in traffic, I said, you don't ride your bicycle in traffic. You drive your bicycle in traffic. Behave like you are a motorized vehicle, and you will stay much more visible and much more alive. So just things to be aware of. This is going to bring me to a point where I'm going to start running out of time here. There's a number of protected designs that are out there. You can find a lot of these designs at the National Highway Institute. You can also find them on People for Bikes or League of American Cyclists, and they will, or League of American Bicycles now is what they call themselves. So there's lots and lots and lots of information out there about improving the infrastructure in your town. And my recommendation to you is, if you are thinking about doing this and making a presentation in your town, do your homework before you go. Bring some visual aids with you and pass them around if you need to, or if you're really good and you can put together a nice PowerPoint and put it on a computer, Many of these town meetings have the ability to do that. I know we do at our town hall because I've actually used those, not for making a presentation there, but when I'm working for the registrar's office and doing training, I use the big screen at the council chambers. So there are ways of making it very, very evident to people what the right way to do this is. So do your homework. You know, if you don't know much about it, get a hold of your local bike walk advocate in your town or maybe in your state. They may have some visual aids for you. They may even want to help you by showing up and making presentations for you. But the more that we make noise about this, the more we'll get done. So it's really, really important to do this. When you take a look at some of these designs, it's really fascinating the way that they have laid a lot of this out, and it's really well thought out. So it's not like it's just, something that's just thrown together. There's a lot of paint involved because of crosswalk markings and bike boxes, which are greened out to let people know that there's going to be bikes there or that there's a safety zone for the bicycles at intersections. There's a ton of things you can do to make things really work. And it's, once again, a little bit of research online and you can find a lot of information to help you through it. So Dutch style, this is called Dutch style intersections is what it's called. And it's definitely a way to make our roads a lot safer. And when you're, you know, riding in a big Dutch city, you're going to find that 70% of transportation is done on bicycles. So changes the game a lot when you get that many people on the road. How do you make the roads safer for cyclists? Put more cyclists on the road. I've been saying this for years. It's definitely the answer. Folks, I'm just completely running out of time, and we're going to have to wait until next week to talk about some other things, including the UCI's latest World Cup season. Cross season is on and started last weekend, and that was at Tabor, and we had some interesting results, and there's lots of stuff going on. I have to have a very short and big shout out to Lizzie Gonzalez, who won the Pan Am Games cyclocross. Lizzie is a local out of Dudley, Massachusetts, and she had come to our cyclocross races for a number of years. So Lizzie is gone up to the next level, and she's really racing well right now. So big shout out to Lizzie. And remember, Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is last one is this weekend. So check it out. It's on Bike Reg, and, you know, check it out. Maybe you should go to Cross Race this weekend. Check it all out. Finishing points, give us your opinion. I'm dying to hear opinions from people. Tell me how you feel about all these things that we talk about all the time. Bicycling, after all, is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, our communities are safer and friendly, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. Spread the word. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride and do your part. Show up to a town meeting with some ideas. And hey, take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Consider parking that car just one day a week and just use your bike instead. I think you're gonna surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving your car, please be safe and be kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or a licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information or no more, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, Keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!